Well, hail to the victors. For the first time in 26 years, the Michigan Wolverines are your undisputed national champions after beating Washington soundly 34-13. We're here to break it all down, get your takes in the live chat as well, right here on a national championship reaction edition of the Three Tech Pod.
One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman.
20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
They get it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
Four-man Alabama rush. Got him.
Oh, no, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
Well, just a sound bludgeoning that Michigan just handed out to Washington. 15-0, perfect season for the Wolverines. And Garrett, I think we got to give you the floor here for a second. You've been on board the wagon all season long. Not always pretty. We'll talk about that. Not always pretty. Not the traditional, conventional, modern victory for Michigan. But at the end of the day, they are standing undefeated top the last four-team playoff in college football history.
Yep, and I'm going to go ahead and go straight to the first comment from Teddy for the night. It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine. It is a fantastic night for those guys. Super pumped for them. Obviously, congratulations to all of our Michigan fans. I have been on the bandwagon for a while this season. Super pumped to have been welcomed to the bandwagon, obviously. I think it was really, really cool to see what they were able to do tonight. Obviously we'll go down, break down the whole thing, but kind of the formula that I said would play out ended up happening. It was all about finding a way to pressure Penix, get in his head, get him off his rhythm, letting your DBs make plays. Obviously you knew that they were going to get theirs at times, but you were saying, hey, if we can just make some plays on the back end, we're going to be okay. And just do what Michigan does. The style of football Michigan plays is wear you down. Right. It's run. It's force you to, you know, do something good. It's put the pressure on you and it's slowly but surely wear you down. And through the game, that's what happened. This game was close all the way till the very end. And then it didn't look so close all of a sudden because that's what Michigan does. It's not pretty. It's not what Michigan's supposed to. Michigan doesn't win games with style points. Michigan never would pass the eye test. Fortunately, going 15-0, you don't need an eye test for that one. You get to carry the trophy anyways. So congrats to all my Michigan fans. Congrats, Teddy. Super pumped for y'all. And you know, what a season, right? What a college football season. We'll obviously recap all of that, but wow, what a season. And so cool to see Michigan end up on top at the end of it.
Yeah, Trey, for your darling, the Washington Huskies, they fall just one victory shy. An incredible year for Kalen DeBoer, Michael Penix Jr., and a company, a very talented roster there in Washington. Ultimately, though, they fall one win shy of the ultimate prize. It really felt like physicality was the difference tonight.
It absolutely was. And you could tell from the word go, right? Like Michigan marches down the field on that first possession. We see Donovan Edwards come out of nowhere with two long touchdown runs. It was good to see him back and part of the game plan. He had kind of faded over the last half of the season, I feel like. But yeah, it really was the physicality that told the story of this game. So I, you know, coming into this one, I thought Washington's offensive line would hold up a little bit better. They passed the test with flying colors against the Texas Longhorns last week, but Michigan's defensive line was just too much. They got pushed. They gave Penix problems all night. They knocked him on his butt several times to the point that he was hurting. By the end of that game, you could see him just grabbing at his side, wincing in pain with every motion that he made. So, you know, kudos to Michigan for, just like they did against Alabama, just controlling the tempo, controlling the line of scrimmage. And ultimately that gave them all the advantages they needed. They tried to go away from it in the middle of that there. And I'm sure Michigan fans, you know, as a neutral, I was, you know, Mitch and I as neutrals were just, you know, screaming at Michigan to keep running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Michigan fans out there were, you know, just ripping their hair out at Jim Harbaugh and Sherrone Moore, just wondering what they're doing. Is JJ McCarthy, you know, had a McCarthy-esque game, right? He made some big plays. He moved the chains with his legs, but they did not want to put all the burden on him. That was not the game plan that they had. But for a little bit there, it looked like they were leaning towards that, almost just like Texas did. But, man, it just a great performance from both lines on Michigan. Offensive line opening up holes for that run game, giving McCarthy just enough time, and the defensive line just wreaking havoc on Washington's offensive line.
Well, before we get into the breakdown, have to get our ad read in here for the Good Brand. They've got a new, I believe, 6-piece drop over at homefieldapparel.com celebrating the victors. Your Michigan set in entirety is over at homefieldapparel.com. You can use code 3TECHPOD for 15% off, or if you go over to Twitter, shop through our code that I just posted. It'll be at the top of the feed underneath this live broadcast. You can find that code. If you just shop through that code and you're a return guest, you still get the discount. You help support the show and obviously get your new championship merch, whether you're a Michigan alum, a Michigan faithful, or heck, you just want some really cool gear. Home Field Apparel has got that for you. Trey, you bring up a good point, because it wasn't the prettiest game from JJ McCarthy, but it really hasn't had to be all that beautiful. It hasn't had to be the Michael Penix-esque performance. It's been the running game, and it's been the physicality defensively. I tweeted out at one point, Michigan went away from running the football in the second half. They were averaging almost 12 yards a carry at the break, and they came out and it felt like they got cute at the end of the first half, kind of kept it going into the second half, to the point where I was going, I don't know if Washington has made the adjustments or if Michigan has gotten cute with the playbook. In reality, I think it was a combination of both. But once Michigan, it almost felt like woke up and realized, okay, we really need to get back to running the football, then it was smooth sailing. The defense took over. Michael Penix Jr. goes 27 of 51 for 255 yards, a touchdown and two interceptions. I don't know that there was another game this season, maybe outside of that Arizona State debacle, where he averaged as few yards per attempt as he did tonight, just 5 yards per pass for Penix Jr. It was the immovable object stopping the unstoppable force here tonight.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And, you know, Washington schematically made a lot of adjustments throughout the game on the defensive side of the ball. And we can break that down here in a little bit and how Michigan kind of weathered that storm. But offensively, Washington just looked out of sorts for most of the game. And credit Michigan's defense for that. Credit the defensive line for generating a lot of pressure. Credit the defensive backfield for hanging with that talented group of receivers. I know they had some coverage busts. I know Roma Dunze was wide open a few times and Michael Penix just missed him a couple times. But, you know, overall, they held their own in that defensive backfield. So not in a way that not a lot of people have been able to do this year. So that really threw off the groove of that Washington offense. They were, you know, chucking it deep on second and 10 when it felt like they needed to just get 5 or 6 yards and get back on schedule. And then they're running routes short of the chains on third and long. Just seemed like they really didn't have an answer for what Michigan was throwing at them defensively. And it was really uncharacteristic. If you're a, you know, just casual fan tuning in and watching Washington or watching a college football game for the first time, like maybe an NFL fan or, you know, just checking out the top prospects for the next year, you're walking away thinking Michael Penix is just another guy. And this is not who he has been all year. That's 100% a credit to that Justin Wilcox led defense. It has been phenomenal all year, and they showed out one more time tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Garrett, Michigan came out to start the game and they punched Washington in the mouth. They drive down the field. Donovan Edwards has a big touchdown run. It felt like, oh my gosh, he's back. It felt like Donovan Edwards had been almost retired as a Michigan Wolverine. He comes back, immediately scores. Washington has no answer. Michigan again punches back. It's 14-3 after the first quarter. I'm sure it felt like to you, as it did to most of us, oh my gosh, we might get a blowout here in a second consecutive national championship game.
Yeah, I mean, it was starting to look that way. I mean, the problem, obviously, is Michigan doesn't make it easy on themselves. These are two playoff games in a row where they were continuously shooting themselves in the foot and refusing to you know, make, you know, whatever adjustments, continue on whatever path they needed to. And you know, it was interesting to me when I was looking at the drive charts, because when you look at the drive charts, they have some success early on. They go in, they score the touchdown, they kick the field goal. Things are rolling. You know, you're a little upset they had to kick the field goal, but you take the points. Okay, whatever. And then there were three straight stops on defense for Washington. You're starting to say, okay, well, here we go. And they're getting away from their identity, and they're trying to throw it a little bit too much, trying to get a little too cute. And for me, the play that I think kind of broke them out of that a little bit was that big scramble from McCarthy. And was it late in the third or early in the fourth, whenever that was, where they were backed up. It was a great punt, and it was just kind of that full quarter of punting battles. And there's just this one where he just got him enough kind of field position, kind of reasserted themselves and put Washington's defense just a little bit back on their heels. They didn't end up scoring on that drive, but kind of flipped the field back and showed them like, hey, we're not completely done. We're not completely out of it. And I think that's kind of what set them up to remember, hey, like, this is still who we are. We can still keep playing this. And man, like, the defense, I don't think you can continue to credit them enough. I think the thing that will get lost in all of this, and this is one thing I want to make sure that I'm keying in on, is this was not Washington on an off night. This is what happens when good teams play a great defense, right? This was not just some off night. It wasn't just that Michael Penix was missing throws. It wasn't just some weird, quirky thing, and we don't have any idea how that happened. That's what happens when four guys are getting in your face all night, right? That's what happens when you can get home, even when you're not bringing a blitz, and you never feel like you have time to really roll out, find your guy, and you know, sling it downfield. Especially when, you know, corners are playing as well as they are, they're fitting into tight windows. That puts pressure on a guy, right? That does put pressure on a guy. And you know, Washington's certainly not without their faults. You know, there were a bunch of drops, but at the same time, like, there was physical coverage. There was a lot going on that, you know, you can't get into a rhythm, and you can't just get into that mentality of like, okay, so let's just keep the offense rolling. Let's keep the offense rolling and, you know, keep catching balls down the field, keep catching balls in rhythm. It's hard to do that when you continue to get stopped and you continue to get out of rhythm and you continue to face long situations where your play calls are limited, right? It seemed for a while the only thing that was working was screens for Washington. And so, you know, when I look at this, I think you really have to credit Michigan's defense on this. They showed up. They made Penix uncomfortable. You know, might have been a couple penalties both ways we don't like, but – I mean, that at the end of the day, that's football, and Michigan's defense did a good job getting against them.
Yeah, and, you know, to your point, like we're mentioning in the comments, Austin made a good point that nine drops from the Washington wide receivers, that's uncharacteristic. This is, I think both things can be true, right? Like, Washington played their worst offensive game in quite some time, certainly looked polar opposite of what it looked like when they played the Texas Longhorns last week in the Sugar Bowl. But at the same time, what you're saying, Garrett, is absolutely true. When you're playing a worse defense, you have more opportunities to make up for that. And so you can absolutely, you know, you can find the inches in other plays. There's going to be more opportunities where they're open. You just see it more often when it's a great defense, because the one bust all of a sudden becomes that you don't hit, all of a sudden becomes, you know, the swinging momentum in the game. So, you know, absolutely credit Michigan's defense. Washington just out of sorts on offense. The pre-snap penalties were a big problem. The hold or phantom hold that wiped out the big game when it looked like, you know, it was always something with the Washington offense tonight. Every time it looked like they were going to get it together and punch back against Michigan, just something happened. A pre-snap penalty backs them up 5 yards. They drop a pass that was going to convert on third and medium, right?
Right.
Something happens that gets them off of the rhythm that they're trying to build. And they just could never get both of their feet going in the same direction at the same time, it seemed like tonight. So a lot of that is credited to the Michigan defense. And, you know, I think they're going to be looking at that game film and really kicking themselves as whenever they do watch that they missed a lot of opportunities as well.
I think that's a good point. The offensive line for Washington certainly had maybe their worst game of the season. While Michigan's pass rush took advantage of that and got home, right? I think a big point that really held Washington back was Dylan Johnson's injury and the fact that Washington had no running back depth behind him. It was true freshmen that were coming in when Dylan Johnson goes down on the first play of the game, right? He's got a banged up shoulder. Mm-hmm. He has his ankle get landed on. He's the absolute walking wounded from the very get-go. Washington has 46 yards of rushing to go along with 255 yards through the air. The Wolverines rushed for 303 yards on 38 carries. Like, that right there kind of is the tail of the script, right? Because Penix then has to do everything through the air. He has to throw 51 times against the best secondary in the country. His wide receivers are dropping balls left, right, and center. It just wasn't in the cards for Washington tonight, right? Like, you can't get away with probably one of those mistakes against a team like Michigan, let alone a recipe of mistakes.
I mean, let's be completely honest, though. Like, running the football is not really a big part of Washington's game. I think there have been, like, maybe two games all season where the running game played a massive factor in them winning. That they, you know, they keep it balanced, they keep it interesting. And I'm not saying anything about, you know, obviously having Dylan Johns would be a huge advantage, right? Having him on the field is a huge advantage. But this was already going to be a mismatch just on paper ahead of the game because Washington doesn't run all that much and Michigan is elite at stopping the run. So, you know, for me, I didn't think they were going to run very much at all. It really showed up out of the backfield because there were a lot of guys trying to catch the ball at the backfield that, you know, they did make mistakes. And I think about the one, I think it was third and five. And it was, you know, I think it was when it was that 7-point lock for a little while. And, you know, the running back flares out, little wheel, and, you know, hits him, no problem, but just a drop, right? And it should have been a converted first down. But, again, that's kind of back to what I was saying is when you're out of sorts, when you're out of rhythm, right, and you're not, you know, doing that continuously, that does affect your psyche, right? You're going back to the sideline every drive going, gosh, man, what are we doing? Like, you know, we got to get it together. Come on, like, here's a better idea. What are the coaches seeing? Let's, you know, psych each other up. Let's go. And then you get back out there and you still have that running in the back of your mind. You're not a complete fresh slate. You're still thinking in the back of your head, like, okay, well, I really need this. I really need to pick this up. And so when it comes time for that big third down, third and five, and it's time to go, and if they call your number, that will lead you to, oh gosh, I need to do this. And then you can sometimes psych yourself out. So I'm not saying the mistakes were completely just because Michigan psyched them up, but like, I do think you have to give Michigan's defense the majority of the credit here to say, like, you guys made mistakes, but, you know, there were some drops. There were some big plays, too. And, you know, there's basically a bend but don't break defense. They could have scored a touchdown opening drive, and instead Michigan's defense holds, forces them to three, and kind of set the tone even from the very start.
Well, I've got an interesting question based off of this, and it comes from a Jim Harbaugh quote from the post game. He said, and I quote, "I've said it before, but right here, this is the greatest quarterback in the University of Michigan in college football history," end quote. Now, there's a graphic that Haynes Fawcett tweeted out that gives kind of the accolades for JJ, right? 27-1 career record. He wins a national championship, 3 conference championships. He's a first team all Big Ten selection this year, the Greece Breeze QB of the year this season, and then the Rose Bowl MVP. Now, I know this is the heat of the moment, and I know this is obviously, you know, what you're supposed to say as a national championship winning head coach. This has got to be a little bit of adrenaline running, though, right? I mean, McCarthy went 10 of 18 for a 140 and had a 58 QBR.
Did he mean best quarterback at Michigan ever or best quarterback ever?
The quote is the greatest quarterback in University of Michigan. And then he kind of stutters in college football history.
Oh, well, that's not true. I love the kid. I think the one thing that he's not going to get enough credit for is how competitive he is and how much he was willing his team to victory. And you can do that even if you're not having your best game or even if you're not super efficient through the air. You can still have a leadership presence. You can still, you know, there's some stuff he did with his legs that was really good. The big play for me that kind of broke the whole thing was when you had the big catch to the tight end. I think it was, you know, he was having to climb the pocket, step up, makes that throw. That was just a backbreaker, you know?
And there's a damning screenshot from that play. That's the drive. That is the drive after.
That was like two plays after the
holding call against Washington. But no, you're right. Again,
you can call it ticky tack. Like, it does. I get it. Some stuff's going to get called, and, you know, this is why maybe you don't hire ACC refs. And that's, I mean, I'm not going to say that SEC refs, maybe Big 12 refs or something, but no, I just, you know, that's part of the game. and there were missed calls probably both ways. But man, like that play, it was one pass, but that play was huge in that game to flip the field, put Washington back on their heels, ended up scoring the touchdown to put them up two. And then you started to feel like, okay, well, this game is pretty much out of reach. You know, maybe not quite. Maybe Washington could swing something, but based on the flow of the game, not quite. But again, love JJ. He competed. He fought hard. He deserves the win. He deserves to feel good about this. This is a great resume. Best quarterback in college football history. I feel like I could, you know, name like 17 off the top of my head.
I feel like he means Michigan history. That's what I'm going to take.
This in Michigan history, I'm okay with it. There's probably some debate, but like
Michigan's not known for having elite quarterback play. So he might be the best quarterback in Michigan history.
And if he's only counting college, I'm okay with that because there was that Tom Brady guy who was at Michigan too. So
who split time in his final
split time. Exactly. Like if you're talking just college football, then like, okay, maybe. But yeah, I don't know. That's if he's talking all of college football, that's absurd. And you know that he's definitely taking an NFL job if that's the case, because he's just saying whatever he wants to on the way out.
JJ to me is the ultimate, like, you love him if he's on your team quarterback, right? Like a guy that is not okay, realistically should not be up for national awards. He's not that guy when it comes to playing quarterback. I think JJ McCarthy is an elite system quarterback. He's a great game manager. He's what Joe Burrow was in 2018 before Burrow grew up and became a stud, right? Like he's really good at not turning the football over.
Here comes the Heisman campaign. This is what Mitch is saying.
No. Isn't he out of eligibility? He's done, right?
Is he done? I don't know, maybe.
I don't think he is. I think he...
I thought he had one more.
Did he come back?
I'm looking it up.
I thought he had one more.
I thought he was done, but Michigan fans in the comments tell me
the only thing wrong there. Not disrespect Chad Henne.
I'm saying this is if this is your quarterback, you love him to death.
Right.
You probably know in your heart of hearts he's going to be holding a clipboard at some point in the near future, right? Like likely not the next Tom Brady and winning Super Bowls left and right, but he clearly has so much value to your specific team. And in JJ's case, I think he's now the patron saint of system quarterbacks in my mind. Maybe we need to print the t-shirt, get home field on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't argue with the results though. I mean, the system is working. 89.5 QBR this year, third in the country in QBR. So it's not like he's, you know, it's not like they're winning in spite of him as he's a system.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. He does have one more. He can come back. I looked that up just now. On three said he can come back. And so, yeah, like, I mean, look, he should come back because he's not going to get drafted very high with the way that he plays right now. But, you know, give him another year of, you know, development. He's good with his legs. He's athletic. He, you know, he's a lot more mobile than you can give him credit for. You know, he could, you know, improve his game and become a lot more of a passing threat. They need some better outside guys, in my opinion. But
yeah,
you know, if they get some better outside guys, better targets for him to throw to, you know, you could see some development improvement.
They might win another national championship if they get some outside guys. That's just what's coming back this time.
They might, and I want to go there in just a minute, Trey. I think maybe to wrap up on this, you know, coming into the postseason, we wondered if Michigan's speed would be good enough to compete with the likes of Alabama, and then ultimately with an all-star trio of wide receivers. From Washington, and that secondary more than stepped up. They had an elite performance throughout the postseason. It feels like, and it's kind of maybe rich to say this on the night that they won a national championship, but it feels like the one thing that's missing from Michigan is those elite wide receivers. If they were able to add that speed on the outside, we're talking about, I think, a perennial Alabama, Georgia-like competitor. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. That's the only thing that's separating them from those dynasties. And it's what's held them back from being a dynasty, quite frankly, because they've been right on the doorstep of it, right? They've been one or two wins away the last 3 years. Think about if that TCU game goes differently last year. If they're able to somehow find a way to beat TCU, that's going to be a really solid game against Georgia. I don't know that they beat last year's Georgia team, but they have a puncher's chance in that game. And obviously we saw Michigan, Georgia on the field in 2021, but they've been close the last couple of years. And if they had those guys on the outside, on the offensive side of the ball, we're talking about Michigan in the same breath as the height of Nick Saban and what Kirby's building at Georgia. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the defensive backs stepped up today and they held their own against a talented group of wide receivers. But the best way that they were able to really combat that lack of speed is, you know, they just bullied people. And that's their strength. They played to their strength. They didn't try to be a team that they weren't, other than a couple of drives there in the second and third quarter. But they just believed in who they were. And they bullied the other teams. They bullied Alabama. They bullied Washington. And that can overcome a lot of lack of speed if they're able to commit to that. And if you're just, quite frankly, more talented than the team that you're going up against.
Well, I think that Michigan has a bright future. As we just confirmed, JJ can come back. Will Jim Harbaugh come back is another question entirely. I don't know that we need to speculate because, or at least speculate a ton, because there's not a ton of new information out there. But with so many openings at the NFL level, we know Harbaugh has wanted to at least explore those options. That's been very, very public. Just kind of one word, yes or no. Is this Jim Harbaugh's ride off into the sunset, or does he come back for 2024?
Yes, it's his ride off into the sunset.
I think so, too. It seems like that's where things are heading anyways. A lot of his kind of pregame comments were leaning towards that as well, kind of talking like, hey, what's your message for your team? Let's just go have fun, do our best, you know, and that feels like a guy is on his way out regardless. So, I mean, he's able to now say that he did it and he's done a great thing for his alma mater, and that's awesome. But, you know, I think this is probably his moment to bow out graciously and take his next chance at the NFL.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It wouldn't shock me if for whatever reason he returns, but he finally has that accomplishment at the college level. No one can say that he didn't win the big game. This was Harbaugh's legacy season to me. And you know, if there is ever a time to leave college and go to the NFL where you don't have to recruit, you don't have to worry about NIL, you don't have to deal with the headache that is modern college sports, it's probably this season. But we'll wait and see. We'll see if there's any sort of announcement. Obviously no indication as of yet. He just gets to bask in the glory of a national championship. Garrett, we'll see if you have that graphic that I just sent over to you, the way too early CFB top 25. This is from On Three. Now, listen, you know,
why are we giving these guys airtime?
Well, only because I think it's a healthy discussion to go along with the new college football playoff format that heads to 12 teams next season. Starts, as we got word, I believe, earlier this afternoon. It starts on December 20th. The first round games are December 20th, which is amazing to have that through the Christmas holiday. A little bookend Christmas, so you'll get some right before. You'll get the second round right after. Yeah, listen, Trey, you speak for all of us. On Three does a lot of things that we scratch our head and, frankly, are just clickbaity. But give me your take on this top 25, and for the podcast crew that's listening to this the next morning, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State are the top five. Michigan, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Penn State, Missouri round out the top 10. Seems like there's a lot of recency bias there, right? Ole Miss all the way up to number 7. They have an elite portal class coming in. Penn State seems to always get a nod inside the top 10, even though we don't know what that offense is going to look like. They do have, I think, is it Julian Fleming coming over from Ohio State, former top wide receiver, one of the top wide receiver prospects in the country. But just give me kind of your general temperature to the top 10 specifically.
I don't know what Michigan has to do to be ranked above Ohio State in a poll, like three times in a row. And win the freaking natty and you're still behind Ohio State. What are we doing there? Like, even this is an inconsequential poll and you still can't put Michigan ahead of Ohio State. That's my biggest takeaway. You know, I think Texas, you know, obviously three SEC teams, 1, 2, 3, with Texas moving to the SEC, two more in the top 10 and a couple more scattered throughout the rest of the top 25. It's going to be a bloodbath in the SEC next year, especially with the divisions being scrapped. I think Texas is a little too high. Too many question marks, you know, for me with they've got a lot of talent coming back, obviously, but I think their weaknesses were exposed in that Sugar Bowl, and they're not going to be going up against the, you know, Iowa States and Houston's and other teams like that of the world anymore. It's going to be a big adjustment for them. They have a tough schedule, I guess, is what I'm trying to say with the Longhorns. So very interesting top 25. Oklahoma State sneaking in at 22 is interesting as well, down towards the back. And Washington falling all the way to 25. I don't know that they fall off that much. I think they're going to be a force in the Big Ten. I don't remember their schedule off the top of my head, but that offense in the Big Ten could cause a lot of problems for teams that aren't used to having to keep up with that type of offense.
They've got Dylan Gabriel coming in too at quarterback, right?
So another gunslinger is going to Oregon.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
But they have Will Rogers, I think.
Will Rogers, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Wrong transfer.
I was going to say with this, I hate these way too earlies because, number one, you're putting it out specifically for clicks. I get it. It's what it is. Michigan just won the whole thing. They just won the whole thing. They just proved they were the best team in college football. Put them up there. Like, put them at number one. I understand it's next year. So, like, ooh, what might be next year? But that's also the problem is, you know, we're going to have the rest of this transfer window plus spring practices for people to get hurt and lose spots and whatever else, plus another transfer window.
Yeah.
And the second, you know, the second signing day and all summer and all of fall for people to decide that they lose their spot. They don't want to play to preserve their red shirt. Nobody has any idea what any of these rosters are going to look like next year. And you know, that's the funny thing about trying to project this. You know, we're talking in the chat a little bit about, you know, would Texas be favored next year at Ann Arbor? And I'm like, I can't imagine, you know, it's early in the season and, you know, you just won your national championship game and you know, it's, you know, on the road. And so it's not necessarily favorable for Texas. And then what do the rosters look like? And, you know, we think that both of these teams are going to return a bunch of their talent, but who knows? Like, anything could happen at this point. And so, you know, for me, I'm just looking at this and I just hate the whole concept of the way too early top 25s. I understand you want to put them out, you know, 5 seconds after the game releases. You know, maybe they've waited until, you know, Judkins announced to Ohio State just so they could squeeze Ohio State up above them somehow. But yeah, I'm not my favorite thing. I really have zero opinions on this list because who knows what the rosters are going to look like. Maybe I'll just say Arizona's underrated because they looked good.
Big, you got a cigarette energy, right? Like, just can't get enough. Have to immediately move on to the next fix. I think Michigan being behind Ohio State, this feels like they just used their dumb NIL evaluation calculator and ranked those teams in order through the first few. Quinshon Judkins did pick Ohio State tonight to transfer away from Ole Miss, but Oklahoma being at 12, they've lost everybody. That's an absolute crime. Kansas State at 16, they've lost everybody. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think a little bit of engagement farming from this list. But with that, what I really wanted to get to kind of as we maybe move towards the back end of this reaction stream, we've all got work in the morning after all. 12-team playoff right around the corner. And I mentioned it starts early in December now. We go from December 20th to, I think, January 19th is the schedule. So it's a month of playoffs. Kind of a two-part question. Maybe first, let's talk 12-team playoff. We are now in that era. That is a reality. That's not just something that we see on a video game. What's your anticipation level for the 12-team playoff, and do you expect the level of competition, or at least the product, to improve, or are you just excited to have a bigger bracket?
That's a fantastic way to phrase that question, because I'm pumped to have a bigger bracket. I'm pumped to expand access to this tournament, but yeah, we'll still get entertaining games on the field, but the product won't be as elite is what we saw in the semifinals. It just won't, because we're going to get 5 versus 12 and 6 versus 11. And some years that might be an upset, but most of the time there's going to be a couple clunkers in there. We're not going to get, you know, I don't remember the math, I guess 12, 11 games that are just absolute bangers every single year. That's just not going to happen. And I think that's what a lot of the playoff naysayers are, you know, throwing out there. Oh, you're just going to get blowouts in the first round. Like, no one wants to watch that. I want to watch it. Okay. I want to watch it on campus. I want to watch the environment, because what that means is we're getting to throw out this senseless debate that we have to have for the 4-team playoff. And we're getting to move on to where there's no argument. Number 13 does not have an argument that they should be included. Right. And it's most of the time, it's going to be very clear who the top teams are. So yeah, I'm very excited. The product might not be as great in the first couple rounds, but it'll be on campus, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah, and the big thing about that too, Trey, is, you know, the whole 13 doesn't have an argument is really going to be true, because at a certain point it feels like you're going to be scraping to get those full 12.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's,
you're going to have to pick between a couple of...
People say that's a bug. That's fine to me that we're scraping to get 12. I'd rather scrape to get 12, like the NFL scrapes to get 14, and know that my quarterfinal, semis, and championship are the right teams.
Right.
And wonder, okay, would 13-0 Florida State find a way, right? Would they, are we breaking down injuries to figure out who this last team is? That's just ridiculous.
Or looking at who looked the best and comparing strength of schedule. Let's just take it all out, because at a certain point you're arguing over, okay, well, both of these teams are 9-3. So, you know, that team got beat by 40 by number one, and that team got beat by 50 by number two. So what do we think is more embarrassing? I don't know. They got the close against number one. Ah, whatever. Just put them in, right? You can just slide that last team in at number 12. They'll be happy to go. 13 is going to feel slighted, but nobody's going to care and no one's going to listen, right? You can really feel bad for 5 and 6 in this format, but nobody cares about 13 and 14 in the new format. And I'm just excited that we get to go to that point. And, you know, maybe we get to find a way to slide some of those G5 guys, or I don't know if it's going to be G7 or however many, you know, conferences we're going to have, and all the decay and everything else. That's for a new, you know, Pac-12 days of our lives, maybe ACC days of our lives this offseason to look forward to.
I did see that they're probably going to adjust it. It won't be 6 auto bids anymore. It'll be 5 most likely, but that's not official yet.
Yeah. I don't know that they've had the vote on that.
And the conference has to have 8 teams to be considered an auto bid. So the Pac-2 will not get an auto bid.
Dang. It's a dang shame.
I wish they would have cut it at 3. You gotta have 3 teams. Sorry, man.
They're already targeting those two already with the 8. So yeah, they might as well just been completely honest with it.
Right.
Trey, just to close the loop, that is a red hot Green Bay Packers team that's rolling into Dallas as the 7 seed. So watch your mouth there with the 11-12 seeds. You never know what can
happen. I mean, but look at the AFC side, man. Like,
terrible. Oh, the Steelers being
just
in.
Just send the Ravens to the Super Bowl, and, you know, the NFC will figure out who meets them in a month.
Pretty much. I think that's exactly how the NFL playoffs are going to go. Guys, we didn't have a Festivus episode, but I think there are a couple of grievances we could air here, maybe as we in the stream, whether it be broadcast related, whether it be not getting anything on the college football game. Like, is there anything that kind of irked you about this broadcast? Maybe this ends up being kind of more of a regular segment going into year 3.
I need to jump in on this one. They almost felt depressed that Michigan was doing well. That's what at least it sounded like to me, because it seemed like every moment they had, they're like, well, and here's an awesome opportunity for Washington to respond. I'm like, they just scored. Like, they'd be like, and Corum barrels into the end zone, and now Washington's really going to have to respond, and now Penix is going to – and I'm like, okay, like, for a second, shut up and celebrate the team that's succeeding at the moment. Like,
Smoltz syndrome.
Right. It was pretty bad. And so and even at the very end, as they cut to the wide shot and the team runs onto the field and the confetti's raining down, do you know what Herb Street was saying?
Washington 3?
No, he was saying, well, you know, Washington will be back. They're really good. They'll be set up for. I'm like, we're currently looking at maize and blue confetti raining on the field. And they're like, well, you know, Washington, got to give them their credit. They'll be back. That's something you say towards the end of the broadcast, you know, kind of in passing.
You're showing the crying Washington players, not the Michigan players celebrating.
Right. Yeah. Like, at least wait for the clock to tick down to final. Right. And not just like, oh, 3-2. It's okay. Washington's still really good. And I'm like, well, they should have won the game then. But no, it seemed to me watching the broadcast that there was a whole lot of just kind of, oh, well, you know, that's okay. And I can't believe that it's not going like this. It seemed disrespectful to me. I feel like you got to let the winning team have their moment. I feel like if you're going to be calling one of these games at the biggest stage, you have to be willing to be excited for both teams when they do something well. And there was so much of that for Michigan, and there just wasn't that much for Washington tonight. And it just was kind of a dead broadcast because of it. There wasn't a whole lot of excitement.
It's so weird to me because Fowler Herbstreit is out. They're obviously a fantastic crew, like, objectively. Because Herbie, it really struck me, and it was the first time I like really thought about it. He breaks down every single play. Every single play, he has like a special insight. And that could get annoying, but it's actually legit good insight on every play. It's like, oh, look at this pulling guard that you might not have noticed, or look at this like pick play out here. And it's really, really good stuff. But I feel like together they're almost missing something. And like Fowler is fantastic at describing the game. He is a great play-by-play man, but I don't know that he brings enough energy to counteract Herbstreit being super analytical, if that makes sense. Like if you paired Herbstreit with Gus Johnson, it would be a goaded. Yeah, can we start the motion, have Gus and Joel call the national championship game? If you can get rid of Joel Klatt, then that's fine. But Gus Johnson.
If your option was Gus and Joel or what we had tonight, I'm going to Gus and Joel.
Mm.
I don't love Joel Klatt, but I love Gus.
I might. And I texted this to y'all right off the top. I asked y'all in our group thread, like, did the intro feel super flat? Because after the hype video, which was a sick hype video, we immediately went to, you know, watching the teams get ready to come out. Last little words that, the captains are giving to the boys. They're walking through the tunnel. And it was like it was Saturday at Augusta between Chris and Kirk. Like, the vibe could not. Well, here's Michael Penix leading his troops out onto the field. He's been really good this year, Chris. And just really, really excited to see what it was so pedestrian. This is the national championship of one of the most watched sports in the world.
Right.
Let's get a little bit of energy going. I mean, geez, pop a 5-hour energy. Let's figure out what it takes
it's not like
the 2-5 gum and let's ride.
The conditions were also kind of crazy outside, so it's not like it's a lazy day. Like, there was like wind blowing, storms coming through, like everybody's going crazy. There should be an energy in the building.
The roof was leaking.
Like, there was an energy in the building. I don't know if y'all watched towards the end, the Michigan fans going crazy. That was awesome. And the
both fan bases brought it. Like, you could hear the Washington fans, you could hear the Michigan fans,
and they stayed in it till the very end. Like, the Washington fans stayed in it till the end. I was super pumped for them. You know, things obviously didn't go very well for them tonight on offense. Very different game than they normally see. But, I mean, they're cheering to the very, very end. They got their money's worth out of those tickets. But, man, just a dead broadcast. I mean, Mitch, you're totally right. It was just a dead broadcast. And some interesting commercial choices there towards the end as well. I won't go into too much detail. But there are some interesting commercial choices towards the end about target audience and who might need a cream for what.
And the deodorant lady, do you guys get the deodorant lady?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. The talking about deodorant and how she was stinky and how you can get a deodorant for your whatnot and the who's a what's. And I'm like, this is a college football broadcast. Who do you think is watching this?
This is not the
WNBA.
And we didn't get the NCAA 24 commercial, but
three
or four times.
Listen, we were right there pushing. We had the Bill O'Reilly special, the no spin zone. As much as we wanted the EA trailer or something to drop, we were tweeting Matt from Extra Points, who said, guys, the internet is lying to you. I don't believe that there's going to be a trailer tonight. And I hated to be Johnny Raincloud, but that was what I kept hearing, was they might drop some news. Now, I do think they absolutely dropped the ball. They had millions of us tuned into the game and even more tuned in on social media, waiting for some little piece of cheese, as I kept seeing from one of our group threads. Just give us something to nibble on here at the end of football season, and they didn't give us anything. And that is concerning, even though from what I've read, we're still on track for a July release. It's really concerning to me how quiet that they've been on absolutely everything. In fact, I went and checked their Twitter account. The EA College Football Twitter account hasn't released anything since the end of 2022. So it has now been over a year since they released anything officially. That's just like super. I know we're all going to go out and buy the game, but it seems like kind of a middle finger to an audience that is just dying to consume this product once again.
Yeah, you said it best, man. Like, they really dropped the ball tonight and could have had everybody sharing that on social media, everybody talking about it, but I guess it's not important to them.
Well, and I thought my favorite tweet of the night about that, and, you know, kind of pertaining to that, was the, I think it was the Sidelines Nebraska page. I think that was the one that tweeted it out, where they had the Peter Griffin with the EA. I just want to talk to him. I just want to talk to him. I just want to talk to him.
That's how we felt all night long.
It's pretty fantastic.
The other weird commercial, and I don't know how much of our national audience got this. Whataburger's doing wings now? What is that about?
Man, ever since they sold to that conglomerate in Chicago, they just been doing too much, man. They've been slacking on the basics.
Make Whataburger Texan again.
The food's not good anymore. It's not, well, it's not that I won't order it, but it's not what it used to be.
And we didn't get the Hatch Green Chili Burger this year, and I was upset about that.
You got to drive to New Mexico to get it now.
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say, did you drive to Las Cruces for that?
No, you can get it in the fall. You've been able to get it in the fall for like years. It's like a fall staple, and they just didn't bring it back this year, and I was actively upset.
Yeah.
I thought about it many times.
Come for the championship breakdown, stay for the commercials and fast food takes, man. I love the show.
That's exactly right. very, very quickly, Trey, as you just tweeted out, the Georgia Bulldogs are the betting favorite to win the national championship in 2024, the 2025 postseason, 17-4 odds for those of you on the podcast side, followed by Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and Texas round out the top five. Seems like a who's who of the betting favorites. Vegas knows how to take people's money. And if I was to name a top five without, you know, seeing odds, honestly, that's probably the top five in some order that I would have come up with.
I want to point out, this Ohio State 8-1, Michigan 9-1.
Truly,
what does Michigan have to do?
That's just petty at this point.
They're like 8-1. No, 9-1.
Yeah.
They could have tied them. They're like, they basically have the same path to the playoff every year. Just crush the Big Ten. Someone's gonna beat each other. Someone's gonna beat, you know, whoever else in the Big Ten championship game, and then waltz to the playoffs. That's basically the model for both of these teams.
All of that kind of gets thrown out the window, at least in theory, right? I mean, the Big Ten West is no more. The punching bag's gone.
I know that it's not. I don't know that it really changes. I mean, the only thing that really changes is you're going to get the game, I think, twice in a row.
Yeah.
That might be presumptive. I don't know that Oregon or Washington are going to be able to. Yeah, well, that's true.
That would truly be sick. A team in three, best of three series. Let's get a little baseball.
Putting the first two almost guarantees it. If one team goes 2-0 in those games, that might just push the other one out. But
that would be interesting to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think we get out of here on that very quick promo for what we have coming up in year three of the podcast. Just want to, quick pat on the back, round of applause. A big thanks to you guys. We are entering year three. We are up over 150 episodes now. And it is thanks to listeners like you. The YouTube numbers continue to grow. I just tweeted out, I guess a couple days ago, I don't normally make our numbers public just because that's not why we do this, but we had over 25% growth over the last month. We did over 3 million interactions, and it's really cool to see that not only the content that we're putting out is entertaining, but I think what we keep hearing is that it's quality, it's educational, It's well informed. And of course, we have hot takes from time to time. I mean, Garrett is keeper of the hot takes, right? That's what makes college football fun. We want to keep it spicy. But at the end of the day, we're not just trying to say things for engagement. We're not trying to say things to, you know, make someone mad, get someone in our comments for money. We do this because we love the game and we love covering it. And that has been borne out, I think, in the results. So we've got a whole lot in store for year three. We will go down to one episode a week through the off season. But I've already been talking with numerous guests. We want to try new content. And we've got some things brand-wise that we think you'll really, really enjoy coming out soon as well. So just stay tuned to the YouTube channel, to our social media at 3TechPod for all of that. Just a lot of plans and a lot of things in store. And again, like I said, the thanks really start, Trey and Garrett, with you guys for being a part of this and joining me on this crazy little ride. First 2 years have been incredible, and I think we've grown more than we could have even imagined. So let's shoot for the moon, baby.
Absolutely. Shoot for the moon. And when we miss, we'll still be in the stars.
Right.
There it is. That was Michael Scott, right?
I think so. Yeah.
love ending it with a good Office quote. Well, guys, that'll do it for year two of the 3TechPod, the 2023 college football season, the Michigan Wolverines, your national champions. That we have a whole lot coming up on our off-season content. So make sure you're staying tuned to the YouTube channel, the podcast. If you're over there listening, give us a 5-star rating, leave us a review. We'd love to have you be an active member of the Jimmies and the Joes. For Trey Reeves and Garrett Turney, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for joining us on this journey. More in store. And until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious. Yep. How-